This is DJ Kick, and you're listening to Steve Kelly Delivers, where you get a glass and a half of inspiring, influential, and interesting guests with every podcast. You can follow Steve Kelly Delivers on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Steve Kelly Delivers is listener-supported on Venmo.com.
Hello, and welcome back, faithful podcast listeners. This is episode 25 of Steve Kelly Delivers. It is a podcast that brings you quality entertainment first class. If you go to my website, stevekellydelivers.com, from there you can access my Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram accounts. Steve Kelly Delivers is a listener-supported podcast, so if you like the content of what you are hearing and you'd like to lend your support, I'll tell you a couple of ways how you can do just that. First, subscribe to my show on iTunes, rate it, write a review, and don't forget to tell your friends about me. Next, you could be my patron on Patreon. I will acknowledge all my patrons. Lastly, if you'd like more of a personal touch, you can friend me on Venmo. And if you make a donation to my show via Venmo, I will give you a personal shout-out during the introductory portion of my next podcast. And now, let's get ready to go into warp drive as I introduce my next guest, Vance Major Owen, who is a Star Trek aficionado, to put it one way. He'll be able to put it a lot of other ways for us. Vance, thank you for making a guest appearance on Steve Kelly Delivers. Glad to have you on the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad to be here, brother.
All right. And just to tell everyone geographically where you're located, your Hollywood is in Kansas, correct?
Yep, absolutely, man. That's where I'm from.
Right in the middle of the country, that goes to show that Hollywood really is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the day of YouTube and Facebook, social media. Yeah, you can become semi-internet famous anywhere, man. So, yep.
All right. And speaking of like how you got to becoming semi-internet famous... let's talk about first your production companies that you actually have that are able to launch your shows that you do.
Well, my main production company that I work from is Shadowstorm Studios, and we actually do independent films. I've made zombie films, I've made a superhero film. We just started doing a film called The Visitor. So we do a lot. We do independent films. My partner and I, Jeremy Minard, we've known each other since like the fifth grade, and so it's always been our dream to just make films of a lot of different varieties. And the one thing that we wanted to do was make fan films, like Star Trek fan films. Melbourne has been probably the most expensive one we've done. That was the one where I kind of reached out to him and was like, hey, you know, I want to make a fan film, and I want to make one with my friend, you know, since we used to play Star Trek when we were kids, you know, with lollipop phasers and popsicle stick phasers and whatnot, you know. Now that we've got more expensive toys, why don't we, you know, put that behind the camera and see what we can come up with. So we spent 3 months doing characters and, you know, the biography of characters and where the characters would go in a story, and started delving into where these characters would go. And, just started going off from there. But it all stemmed from me being part of Michael King's production from Starship Valiant. That was what I actually got tiptoed into fan films, because I had some experience working with him from his production.
Great, and that segues us right to the very next topic. How did Michael King come up with the idea of a Star Trek fan film, or you guys do it together?
No, actually, the thing about Michael, he's actually one of my best friends in fan films. For me, I do a lot of networking online for advertising, and you know, my mentality has always been geeks helping geeks. So whenever, like, because I have a wide range of audience, whenever someone says, hey, can I share this link on on your promenade page. I'm like, sure, why not? You know, that's fine, because the promenade is a kind of a family-friendly geek group, and we kind of post whatever we want, whether it's Batman or Star Trek or Star Wars or, you know, whatever, you know, geek-related stuff. You know, it's just a real family-friendly environment where a lot of, whether you've dealt with drugs or alcohol or whatever, you know, it's kind of a safe haven where you can kind of get away from that and just kind of, you know, dive into just fun geek stuff. So we tend to be family-friendly and be more uplifting stuff. So whenever someone who has, like, a podcast or a YouTube channel or something, they want to share their links, I'm like, sure, why not? So I to that geeks helping geeks, you know, anything uplifting, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. So one time, Richard Wells from Starbase Studios asked, you know, he said, hey, would you mind sharing this link? And I was like, sure, what is it? So when I took a look at it, I was like, oh, wow, you have a bridge. And he said, yeah, we do. We're actually filming this weekend. And I took a look at it, and they were shooting pickup shots for a film called Yorktown. And it was a film that John Atkins was doing. It was like pickup shots from like a 1986 film or 1987 film that had George Takei in it.
And oh, wow.
They were doing the pickup shots there. And I was blown away by this. I was like, whoa, like, I'd love to sit in the captain's chair. And that was just an offhand remark, like I had no intention of it. And he was like, well, we're shooting this weekend if you want to come on down. And instantly I was like, ah! I got to know. Like, so I called my wife and I said, hon, what do I have to do to go down there? And so, you know, after, like, you know, promising for like 3 years to do the dishes, you know, and all the house chores, like, I got to go. And I sat in that chair. And I tell you, I was a Next Generation fan growing up, and I never really enjoyed, you know, TOS. You know, Captain Kirk, I was like, that's my parents' Star Trek. That's a phony. But when you walk on that bridge for the first time, and you see everything in real scale, and the lights are going, and you press the button, and the red alert goes off, and everything, like, you get goosebumps, because you're just immersed in that world.
Yeah, totally.
And oh, it's so cool. And so I went back to work, and from my perspective, like, I got my picture in the captain's chair and something I could advertise for his sets, and in my mind, that was kind of a one-and-done deal. That was my moment to shine for that. You know, I went back to work. 2 days later, I got a message on Facebook from someone that I didn't know, and he said, would you like to be in a movie? And I was like what? Porn? and he was like, well, no. My name is Michael King. Let me introduce myself. My name is Michael King. I make Starship Valiant. I'm a fan film producer. And I was like, oh, okay. He said, I saw you when you visited the sets, and you have the look of an engineer. And which is really kind of funny, because I barely know how to unclog a toilet. So I...
I'm with you there.
Yeah, right? So he was like, yeah, you have the look of an engineer. And I was just like, what, bald and fat? Like, that blew my mind. But he was like, yeah, I'd love for you to, you know, do you think you can do it? And I'm like, well, sure, I'd love to. He's like, well, do you have any acting experience? And I was like, well, no. I mean, I used to play Star Trek when I was a kid. You know, I'd play in my yard, there'd be an alien planet, you know. But I mean, no, I have no acting experience at all, but I'd love to give it a shot. And he's like, well, none of us are actors. We just do it for fun. Why don't you give it a shot? So him and I have just always, you know, it's been pretty much me and him from almost the beginning. And him and I have a pretty much pretty good relationship, and he's always been impressed with my acting. I've always been impressed with his storytelling, and I think we have a pretty similar storytelling ability. We have a similar similar mindset in that regard. In fact, when we shot the first time, at my work, I had to take my wedding ring off. And the only thing from the original story that they had told was that our ship was in a battle and, like, we lost 100 people. And at my work, we have to take our wedding ring off because I work in a factory. And I really wanted to keep my wedding ring on when we were filming. And one of the people said, hey, is Menard supposed to be married? And I brought up, I said, well, in my mind, I think Menard's supposed to be married. And I think one of the 100 people that were killed during the battle was his wife. And, you know, in my mind at least, you know, when people lose their loved one, they can't take their wedding ring off.
Yes,
I think this
very
is something
true.
He deals with. Yeah, and I said, I think that adds the depth to the character that you don't really see. And I said, maybe that's something we can do later on. And Michael's like, you know, I love that. Let's keep that. And
yeah.
That's actually been a staple of the character. And I asked him, you know, like a year later, I said, hey, since it's taken us kind of a long time to get to some of the stories, would you mind if I kind of delved into the character with my own fan films, you know, kind of delving into his story arcs? So when we get to your films, they already know the character stuff. He said, oh, go ahead. I trust you. And that's the relationship I have with Michael, that trust. And he's actually appeared in some of my films as his character. But him and I just, we have a great relationship. In fact, we talked today on the phone about stories and just conversing about my son. You know, I love being a father, and he was kind of there with me when I was geeking out about actually being a dad. So he's always, you know, when he talks, he's like, hey, how's the wife? How's the kid? How's the family life? Like, it's more than just, hey, how are films going? It's, hey, as friend to friend, you know. So, but that's how I got involved with his films.
Nice. So I'm taking it that Michael King had to get, like, some kind of permission from the Roddenberry family to do this, right? Because, I mean, like, the visuals and the sound effects, like, everything is just, brings you right back to literally, because your show, or Michael King's show, takes off, Star Trek Valiant takes off from where the original series had left off, and, I mean, it literally, it's like, takes you, it's like, right there, it's like a continuation.
Some people are very resistant to the guidelines. I found that a lot of the people that are resistant to the guidelines are usually people that don't make fan films, and they're usually people that just want to complain. I personally have never really been, at first I was against them because people really hate change. However, having made several films since the guidelines, I really don't see the guidelines as something negative, but the guidelines allow for pretty much, you know, you can use the ships, you can use the characters. The only thing you're not really allowed to do is you can't use, like, I can't go and say, hey, Patrick Stewart, come be in my film.
Yeah, that would be awesome though, wouldn't it?
What's that now?
I said, that would be awesome though, wouldn't it?
Dude,
especially if he said yes.
Yeah, I'd be like, Menard who? Like, exactly. Like, who wants to see me? Like, go get that bald guy, not this bald guy. Like, you know, no comparison. But the guidelines allow for, you know, you can play in the sandbox, but you have to play nice, per se. Or at least their definition of nice. And again, I've had no problems. And again, the things about the guidelines is they're not, like, some people act like they're draconian, that they're so, you know, you can't bend any rule. But I kind of see it as, you know, it's not the letter of the law per se. It's the intent. You know, if you've got good intentions, they're not going to come after you and be like, you better do this now. You know, like, their intention is just, look, don't come out here and try to act like you're going to be the next Discovery. You know, just go into it with good intentions. Like, if you watch some of my films, like, I leave the flaws in. Like, you will see a Starfleet officer with tennis shoes. You will see, you know, a Starfleet lesser. And sometimes I'll let the camera drip down just a little bit where you'll see, oh, he's actually wearing blue jeans, and you can see the top of it. You know, I leave those flaws in.
And that's like a throwback kind of to the original. I said that's like kind of a throwback almost to the original series, how they would, like, you know, you'd catch like little flaws in there, you know, like Dr. McCoy would use a salt shaker as his cure-all to, like, heal people. And just like other, like when they would put in a stunt double or something in a scene, like you would know that it was just like a really bad stunt double. But yet, that like added to the show. It just, it made it what it is.
Exactly. It's something where it's like, it brings it back into, hey, this is, it brings everybody back to, hey, this is a fan film. Because to me, and I've always stood by, like, my films are not about the aesthetics. Like, everything is window dressing. What I focus on is my stories. To me, I don't care if I have, you know, nothing but cardboard sets that are not painted and it's just wrapped in duct tape. Like, I don't care. To me, the setting could be outside on a planet, or you could change the setting to a starship, or it could be underwater, or it could be, you know, it doesn't matter what the setting is. To me, the story really won't change. It's the story of whatever is happening to these characters. So to me, it doesn't really matter that they're Starfleet. You can change the setting, you can change, you know, it's the story of what's happening. And that usually is what's happening to each one of the stories. It's what is the story about? Like, if you look at my one film called The Mind's Eye, that's a story about post-traumatic stress. And it doesn't really matter that it's Starfleet officers, because it's something that is a real-life issue for people that are in the military. You know, it's kind of done in a Twilight Zone-esque type vibe with a Star Trek setting, but it's a real issue. And if you look at a lot of the characters, a lot of the sayings, a lot of the conversations that my characters have, they are real-world conversations. It's just in a Star Trek setting. So to me, I don't care that they have tennis shoes, because, again, it takes it back to, this is a fan film. I'm not trying to be Discovery. I'm not trying to be Star Trek Beyond. I'm just trying to be me, you know, so.
Yeah, and I never knew that about fan films, but that, I mean, that's so cool, because it allows you to literally recreate a classic TV show. I mean, that's just awesome.
Well, and that's the thing, like, it's like you, when you get to go play in that universe, it's like, you can kind of pick and choose, like, what you like. And the thing about it is, like, you have so many different series that you show. Like, you got the original series, you got Next Gen, DS9, Voyager, Discovery, you've got the movies, and you can mix and match what you want with whatever stories. It's like, you have all these different things to choose from. Like, I'm really blessed, because it's like, even though, like, again, like I said, some people would say that the guidelines are, you know, draconian, I don't. And I'm just really blessed, because it's like, you know, I've made, you know, I think I have made 36 films. I've been a part of like 40, but I've made 36 films.
Wow.
And CBS has never come to my door and said, you better stop. But then again, I think I've had like $500 budget. So, like, they're never going to bother me, because who am I, you know? And it's one of those things where it's like, if you look at my films, you can tell, like, we're all just having a good time, you know, and that's all it is, you know? So again, if your heart is in the right place, these things are great. And it's something that we all just do for our friends and our family. And, you know, if other people enjoy them, great. You know, that's what it's all about, you know? So anybody could do these, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, you were talking about how many, like, films that you've done yourself. That is like, I didn't even know that you did like zombie movies, and like what other kind of stuff have you done that you want to kind of talk about a little bit?
Oh, sure. Well, I've done two zombie films, and they're kind of done in the Blair Witch style, because I did those two when I was still learning kind of how to filmmake, which I still don't put myself superhero movie. And it's more of like a vigilante type thing. And it was inspired by a group of real-life superheroes, which is a group of, real-life superheroes. And they actually go and they dress up, in what they're inspired to be. And they go and help people by, like passing out food or neighborhood watches or whatnot. But they actually go out and do, like community service and help people just dress up as their own personal superheroes. But this was inspired by that.
Yeah, I've heard of those guys.
Yeah, like I was really, I was part of that community for a while. Not the dressing up part, but, I'm friends with a good part of those people. For a couple of years, I was really close with a lot of them. Still am with some of them. But they're, a good part of them are a good bunch of people. Some of them are a little out there, but a lot of them are pretty nice. The ones that aren't trying to be Batman, those ones, avoid, because that's, you got some crazy stuff out there. But, a lot of them, their hearts are in the right place, and they do a lot of good. So this film was inspired by that. And it was taken from, real life events of, abuse, child abuse and whatnot. So I wanted something that was dealt very, very much in reality. But it was it's a short little, 7-minute film. But it was something that was shot, we did it in about a day. But it was something that we were all proud of that was done around our town. And then I went back to another zombie film where once I started learning how to do makeup and I made my own blood and visual makeup stuff and learned how to do scarring and stuff, I went back to the zombie genre and started doing another zombie film, to which everybody at work, once I started realizing from the Star Trek fan films, they were helping me on those, they started doing, they're like, hey, we want to be part of the zombie one. Can I be a zombie? So we started doing, that. And, we delved into some of the gore. So I moved outside of the Blair Witch style zombie films. I've got just zombie and superhero and Star Trek. So just kind of all around geek type stuff. So.
And speaking of geeking out, You proudly refer to yourself as a geek, and you know what? I do too, because I love science. I love science fiction. I mean, Star Trek, The Next Generation. This, like any kind of science shows, except Doctor Who. I never quite got into that. Maybe the older series, but not the newer stuff. But like, what can you say? I mean, let's face it, nerds have always been cool, but now it's like finally becoming to the surface that, hey, we are cool. So, like, they're finally recognizing. So, like, what would you say is kind of like the rise behind this, like, newfound intellectualism, the love for intellectualism?
Well, I think one of the things about it is, you have, back when I was a kid, if you like comic books, you get punched in the fat gut and shoved in a locker, if you get away from me, comic boy, it wasn't cool to like comics. But now you have those same people that got picked on. And like when I think of stuff, whether it's films or when I draw or whatever, or when I do music, my brain kind of just spiderwebs out, and it's boom, 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 and I have to kind of draw myself back. And I think a lot of people are like that, because that's just the way a lot of our minds work. Creative minds are that way. And those same people that were picked on, they're now the ones that are kind of in control of these things. And so those same people that wanted to see, Bane breaking Batman's back, or, Jason Todd, getting, blown up by the Joker, or, whatever, Captain America, able to get those things, and they know how to achieve it. I saw an article, and this really puts things in perspective for at least me. I saw an article on Star Trek First Contact that back when First Contact came out, a phaser blast cost, I think it was like 10,000 a phaser blast, which explains quite a bit of like why the original series didn't have as many phaser blasts in their movies as like we do now, where phaser blasts are just everywhere. But it cost so much back then to do those things, and movies were really expensive. I'm having in my film, it's called The 11th Hour, and I am having the Dominion War. It's the battle to retake Deep Space Nine, and I'm having my visual effects guy just blast phasers and torpedoes and ships blowing up all over the place, and I'm able to do that for free. Whereas back then, you know, 20 some years ago, that was 10,000 per phaser blast.
Wow.
And that just puts things in perspective. I'm able, you know, my visual effects guy who's doing this stuff for free on his computer in his free time when he gets off work, all because he's just passionate about my project. He likes the script. He's like, yeah, I'll do it. Hey, man, can you do this when you're done? Yeah, I'll get that. Yeah, I'll take care of it whenever I'm, you know, I'll give you a week or so. I'll do it. Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, good looking out. But that's the world we live in. So I think those same geeks that got shoved in the locker, like, we wanted those things. You know, and the thing about, you know, you can only make so many action movies before it gets old.
Yes, you know, definitely.
Those movies now, you know, they're not making as much money. You know, and so many people, they download the movies for free, and they don't have to go to the movies to watch them. They don't have to go to the theater. But there weren't superhero movies like there are now. People will still go out and they'll still go out and watch them. They'll still go out and buy them because they're passionate about it. Like, those same people will still go out and buy an actual comic book. Well, why is it? Because they're passionate about the project. But those same people that, you know, were watching the action movies, they're not passionate about the stuff. So I think the reason why, you know, that level of geekdom, it's because we're passionate and we're smart. You know, not saying we're smarter, don't get me wrong, but it's because we're creative, we're smart, and we're passionate. So that's why I think, you know, this awareness of geekdom, this trend, you know, regardless of how long it lasts, you know, I think that's why it's arisen. So.
Oh, I think it's going to last. I don't think it's ever going to end, at least hopefully not. But no, I think that this trend will continue to go on for quite a long time.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. I think the thing about it, I saw an article that was talking about how the Kelvin movies they're not going to do Star Trek 4. And again, it changes from day to day. So, you know, by tomorrow, maybe they're going to be doing Star Trek 4. Who knows? But I keep hearing, you know, they will, they won't, they will, they won't. As of today, they're not. But the thing about it is, that got me to thinking, with, you know, and it's because Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth, won't, you know, they want more money, which, you know, rightfully so, they should. You know, are they worth it? In their minds, they are. That's a debate for another time. That's not... you know, that's not a debate for today. However, when you look at something like Star Trek Discovery, they have just as big, if not bigger, visual effects scope. Look at the Klingon ships. Look at that battle. Regardless of whether you like the look of the ships or not, the battle and the scope of that is huge. Visual effects-wise, huge. And they don't have to pay their actors near as much. And you're getting just as much quality as you are from those movies. And you're getting an hour's worth of television, or a little bit more. So you're getting 10 hours worth of television, fraction of the cost. And you're getting so much more bang for your buck. As opposed to,
Yeah, very true.
So to me, I think if they play their cards right, you know, I think it could very much last longer. And I think I saw today that they're going to be starting like a launching campaign for Trek. To me, I think great. That's really a wonderful thing for Trek fans, because here, like, what, 5 years ago, we all thought Trek was dead. You know, we kept expecting the bullet in the brain, you know. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's all we could do. And then, staying on track with this surge of intellectualism that's sweeping the country, Congress, this past election, has elected seven newly elected scientists in Congress, which, I mean, normally it's always lawyers. Now we've actually have scientists in there. So where do you think that could take us as a country? What do you see in the horizon?
Well, I hope, fingers crossed, because I know it's always easy to over-politicize things, and I don't want to do that for your show, because I tend to get very political on my Facebook.
Yes, I can attest.
My Facebook knows this. but I hope we can steer things back in the right direction, because I'm not happy with the direction that we're currently on. I was terrified by the report that we had gotten and was ignored. It scares me with some of the people that I talk to on an almost daily basis that sit there and say, well, you believe the scientists and not the science. And I'm like, what?
They're both kind of one and the same there. you're losing me.
Yeah, to me it terrifies me how many people have their head in the sand.
Yes.
So I hope that it's a sign that things will eventually get us in the right direction, because I hope that the right people will listen. Because we need more scientists and people who are educated.
Yes.
Dang. Some people just don't listen, you know. And those are the people that I think just, you know, need to be gone. So I think it's a good thing. And I think we need more. You know, I think we need to be well informed, and I think as a public, we're just not. And I think in an age of information, ignorance is a choice. And
yes, very true.
Damn it, we need to stop choosing to be ignorant. So,
well said. Could not have said it better, and cannot agree with that more. And now, shifting gears back to Star Trek. Let's deviate right back to there again. Now, the science of Star Trek, at the time, was science fiction, but there's a lot of things from the show that we incorporate today. One device that that nobody can do without nowadays, one that we are communicating with back and forth here. So, like, what can you say about the technology today, that what we've gotten from, how much of that could have came from the ideas of Star Trek?
Well, the thing about it is, the thing about, like, that type of technology, like, besides just, like, phones, like, the thing that it blew my mind and I didn't even realize it, when you look at, like, what Picard has, his little tablet, I never even realized, oh, that is a tablet. But, like, my son and I, and my wife, we went down to Florida. And we could have taken a plane, but we chose to drive, and stopping at my stepsister's because it was like 9 hours, and then we drove the other 9 hours to Georgia, which was Ray Tessie sets, the old Star Trek Continue sets. It's now Stage 9. I think it's being the name's going to change to, I think, the Neutral Zone, but it's Ray Tessie sets currently. But we went down there for his open house, and then I shot a couple of films down there while I was there. But that tablet, it had internet access that Royce was watching his little cartoons on, and that kept him busy. That's the same thing as what Picard had in his ready room that he would pick up and would just, not his laptop, but his little pad.
Yeah.
And to me, it's those things where it's like, it's the same thing that Jake would write on, his little notepad, and it's the same thing. Like, I do the same thing on my cell phone. I'll sit there and I'll write my scripts on my cell phone. And I don't write in proper script format, and that drives my partner Jeremy nuts, because he's like, oh, that's not a script. I'm like, bite me. deal with it. But it's those things where it's like, I realized, and it was probably about maybe 2 years after I started doing it, but I was like, oh, Jake did the same thing on one of his pads. Like, when did we get to this point where we're turning into Star Trek? But I mean, we really are. The only thing we're missing is that warp drive.
Yeah.
But we really do. And that's like, turning it back to, hey, I'm going to flip it on you now, and I'm going to turn it back to the
science. Oh, all right. It's getting flipped. I'm ready. At least I think I am.
But you sit there and you talk about the scientists back in Congress, and it's like, man, if we were to get progressive enough to sit here and say, look, we've got problems with the environment. We've got problems with the earth. We've got problems with all these things. We've got to buckle down, and we can. And we can get back to a better point. And we can get society to this end game, this goal. And that's the prize. And no matter what, let's get there.
Yes.
And we can be better. And that's the thing. Like, that's why it bothers me so much to sit here and see the current state that we're in. And I don't care about me, dude. Like, I'm content being like, I don't care. I'll eat Little Caesars and Burger King the rest of my life, and I don't care. But for me, I look at my son, and I'm like, what is the world that I'm giving you? And that's what I look at. Like, what are we doing for our kids? Like, what is the world they're going to have? And I want that world for them. Like, it's not about me, dude. And it's not about you. Like,
right.
What about them? Because it's like, they deserve Captain Kirk, Captain Picard, Captain Sisko. Like, they deserve that. And we're not giving it to them. And we need to.
Absolutely.
And it's like these people that sit here and they fight their ignorant fights about things that simply don't matter. And it really bothers me, because it's like, at the end of the day, when did we stop being people? And so we have some of the things from Star Trek, and I wish if we could just take the one thing from Star Trek, I wish we could just take that morality.
Yes.
Despite all the technology, like, give us that morality, and I think then we could get the rest of what we need from that technology. So, rant over, but that's what I hope we get from the scientists, Congress.
So. Oh, that was an excellent rant. So on spot in so many different ways. And I mean, like, I agree. There's absolutely no reason why Star Trek couldn't be a reality in terms of us all just coming together as a species and tackling the problems that we have to face. I mean, we've got to address climate change. We've got to address world hunger. We've got to address pollution. I mean, we've got, like, islands of garbage out in the oceans. I mean, we really do need to be better curators of this planet, for sure.
The thing about it is, man, it wouldn't be easy. But the thing about it is, like, nothing about it is, if you look at from when they changed from horse and buggy to the car, like, it took time to get there. But when you train and you cross train and you take the people from the coal industry, and it's not going to go away overnight. Like, Lord, no. It's not going to. But when you start making changes slowly, and you start, but again, key point, start making those
yes.
changes to solar and electric, and start saying, hey, we're going to go from this. Let's cross. have a new field, and you're not just stuck there. So you're not out of a job. You've now got them cross-trained. You can now have them train future, and now you've got it in both. You know, it's just we've got that frame of mind that's killing and poisoning ourselves. It's like when you're fumigating the house and you stay in the room and you're like, man, I keep breathing in. I don't know why I'm getting lightheaded. Get out of the room, silly. And that's where we're at. Like, we're too dumb to
yes.
get out of the room. We fumigate it. And it's just like, I just wish somebody would just open the door and yell at us. And I feel like not enough of those voices are yelling. You know? And again, it's saddening how many people have those head in the sand. So, but I digress, man. My rant is over.
No, yeah, believe me. I love your rants on Facebook, and I loved actually hearing it on this podcast. Trust me, I'm like right there with you.
Bless your heart, man.
All right. Now, let's talk about what some of your favorite episodes of Star Trek were. Do you have any particular ones that stick in your mind more than others, or... Vaguely.
But I kind of know.
Minor
one where he goes through all the different multiple personality ones. Like, that is shuddery. You know, that one is the old West Wharf one. That one is really creepy.
Oh, that's right. That was another terrible one. I did not.
Like, anytime somebody asks me that, I always try to start off with those ones just to see if they want to call my bluff, and I try to hold it for as long as I can, especially when I'm at a real heavy Star Trek convention, and it's just an awkward conversation there. But anyway, I would say yesterday's Enterprise is probably, I'd say that probably is what I watch the most. That's what I watch with Royce, because he loves the battle, and every time like the Klingons fire at the Enterprise, he always does. It's kind of like when the DeLorean gets hit with the
lightning.
It's like when the little car DeLorean gets hit and falls off the table, and the trash can lights on fire.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right, Doc Brown.
Yeah, like that's what Royce does every time the Klingons fire at the Enterprise. So I enjoy that reaction from him because I know my son is being engaged by Star Trek, so I love that a lot. But I would say if I had to boil it down to a single episode of Star Trek, in all of Star Trek, I would have to say In the Pale Moonlight from DS9.
Ah, interesting.
Because I think that one right there questions the morality of what it takes to be human and a good person. And it makes you question yourself, because I don't think, like, you could take each one of the captains in that, and I don't think you'd get the same response or reactions, and it would be a completely different episode. Like, if you put Picard in that episode, you'd have a completely different episode. Same thing with Kirk. Same thing with Janeway. With Janeway, I think she'd still be searching for, I want coffee, you know. I hate that woman. I am not a Janeway fan. My wife is. She loves Janeway. I don't. But I think in The Pale Moonlight, I think that one really questions, like, just what it takes to be a Starfleet captain and just a good person. The tension between Garrick and Sisko, and just the Starfleet losing the war, what we have to do to bring the Romulans into it, and then, like, the fact that we actually won the day, but at what cost? And we really didn't win the day, but we did. Like, it's just, it's such a gut punch. you question what if.
Yeah.
You know? And it makes you look inward. So I think it's a great episode. So, I think that would be my best episode. Now, if you were talking about entire seasons, I would say season 3 of Enterprise, because I think that is probably the best seasonal arc of a show, because the ship just keeps getting pounded, and I actually, by the end of that season, I was like, are they going to destroy Earth? Or not? Are they going to go there? It's like, I didn't know if the ship was going to make it, or if Earth was going to make it, or because people were still talking at the time, is this an alternate past? Is this really in continuity or not? You know, so, like, I really felt tension there, where in the first 2 seasons, I didn't really care, but that season made me care about the crew. So I think that was really some good science fiction, like in not only Star Trek, but all of science fiction. I think season 3 really brought Enterprise back to Trek for me. So, yeah.
There you go. And now, lastly, shifting gears from science fiction to science. Do you think, in our lifetime, that the human race will actually make contact with an intelligent species somewhere out there in the universe?
I think we already have, we just don't realize it.
Really?
Well, here's the thing. With that long asteroid thing that came from outside the system, that floated by and then rotated around the star, then shot off faster.
Oh, that's right.
The thing is, like, we don't know what that was. That's not the typical asteroid. And the thing about it is, like, how many UFOs have that elongated look to it? And the metal content that was in that was higher than any other, like, it was pretty damn high. And the fact that they had found more of those outside the solar system, like, I have a lot of time to research because I listen to a lot of documentaries at work. So I listen to a lot of those things. If you type Saturn's rings and look for anomalies in Saturn's rings, you'll find a lot of elongated things like that, similar to that, in those rings. I challenge anybody, look up anomalies in Saturn's rings, and you'll find stuff like that are just sitting there. This shouldn't sit there. This shouldn't do that. Because, again, Saturn's rings, they flow, they rotate, just like the moon does around the Earth. So it shouldn't have stuff that stops it. Kind of like when a river is flowing and you put your arm in that river, it stops it like a dam. And that's what some of these things are doing. So when I sit there and I'm like, why are these things doing these things? Stuff that if it was happening on Earth, we would say, okay, somebody is causing that. Who is causing that? But because it's not on Earth, we just dismiss it. We're like, okay, it must be something natural. Okay. I don't like those type of answers. Now, I'm not going to say, oh, it must be aliens, because, of course, just jumping to conclusions, that's foolhardy as well. So I think we have, we just don't realize it, because we don't know what to look for. Not to mention all of these signals get pass over us. Well, we just don't know what to look for in those as well, because we don't realize what we're looking for.
Yeah, so, very true.
But, and the thing about it as well, forgive me, I don't mean to be coughing into the phone, and I apologize. But one thing also, when you look down underneath the ocean, the vents that are down there, like, it's so cold on the bottom of the ocean floor. Humans couldn't survive at all, of course. You know, the temperatures for one, the pressures two, but then the heat vents, which are much, much harder. So you have one range which is abnormally cold, the other range which is abnormally hot. Humans couldn't survive there at all. And some of these creatures look nothing like what we would even think about life looks like. That's what alien life would probably look like, because nothing like that could even survive up here. So if you want to think about what alien life would look like, you just look toward the oceans. And that's what it would look like, because you have all the range from what would be in space down there. So to me, you know, how do we know that something that didn't crash into the ocean land down there and has been down there? Because, well, of course, it's, you know, temperatures are freezing in space, and you have those cold temperatures down there, they can survive there. So, to me, I think we just don't know what we're looking for. And, of course, because they're underneath the ocean, it could be alien, but we would just dismiss it as fish.
Yeah, very true.
You know, we simply don't know. So, you know, I think we already have. But, you know,
interesting
theory. I also
think
we're a species that has amnesia. we just don't know, you know. So,
very interesting theory. And you know, possibly true. I mean, because we don't know what we're looking for. I mean, what we expect to find is like hominid species, like, you know, humanoid like us, five fingers, similar body structure, big brains, but may not necessarily be that. So very interesting.
Yeah, I don't think they're ever going to come on our lawn. You know, they're never going to park on the White House lawn and say, "Take me to your leader." I don't see that, because I don't think we're that interesting. Just like we're never going to go sit on an anthill and say, "Hey, you know, where's the queen?" You know, we're never going to, like, we wouldn't do that, because we don't care about ants. And, you know, not saying they're not important, but it's just that's not something we would do. And it's, you know, and we don't talk to bees, you know, even though we do interact with them in a certain way, they're just not that important to us in that regard. It's the same way.
Oh, even sure, you see. Sure, you say that now, but when the bees are gone, we're done for. Nah.
Right.
All right. Well, Vance, to finally wrap things up here, tell the listeners where they can find you on social media and your YouTube channel.
Well, my Facebook is, you can look me up, Vance Major Owen, and I'm on Facebook. Just shoot me a friend request or a message. You know, I'm pretty easy to access. Or if you look on YouTube, I'm under No Budget Productions, or type in Vance-a-mania, kind of like Hulkamania, except for Vance, and you can find me that way as well. Yeah, look me up either way. Yeah, I'm easy to talk to, easy to chat with. Yeah, that's it. Easy to access, so yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Vance, I want to thank you once again for making an appearance on my show. It was great, man. Thank you.
Well, hey, I'm glad to be on. Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it. I had a good time.
All right. And on that note, I will say that this has been another successful delivery.